This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. I couldn't get to my keys very quickly. I am so cold. It is Thursday today, and it is 16, and we have reached our high for the day. We're in the grip of another polar vortex or something. I'm really hoping the rest of this winter is not going to be like this. Oh, it's a little cool. Going to turn on my heat. Anyways, it's been a good week. We've had nice weather. Nice weather. Until yesterday. Last night, the low got down to 5 or 4 or something like that. And had a breakfast with a buddy today. Had a very nice breakfast. And we chatted about this, that, and the other. And then tonight, it's supposed to be even slightly colder. But then we're in for the warm-up. So as opposed to a high of 16 today, the high tomorrow is supposed to be in the 30s. Yay. Everything's going good at work. I'm trying to get finished up on one project, and sort of start getting that handed off to another programmer so that I can get started on the new project that's coming up in queue. I may have to share time between two projects for a little while here, but we'll get that all under control. Everything is going to be fine. You know, it will all be fine. And I am incredibly privileged and incredibly blessed, and life is good. I'm about over my little cold, or whatever it was that I had caught. If I caught it from my wife, I think it was the flu, but it really didn't hit me that hard. So, yay for that. Unfortunately, it hit my beloved much harder than it hit me. And she's digging out of the after effects at this point. The doctor has her, she just went to see an ear, nose, and throat specialist today, and he has put her on 2 weeks of complete vocal rest, apparently. She really tore up her voice when she was coughing, and she's had continued sinus drainage that's really, done a number on her. And she's had a few other little physical issues that have arisen as well because of all this. So, poor baby. She's just really had a hard time of it here with this. We're going to have to go home and figure out how we'll probably text each other. That's what we'll be doing over the next... she'll be texting me and I'll be talking to her. So this should be interesting. Knowing my beloved, I'm going to keep having to say, you're on vocal rest, stop talking. Because it's very hard. It's very hard for her not to be communicative. So right after she had gotten out of the doctor's office, I just happened to have called at that point. And so she was trying to talk on the phone, and she handed the phone to her mom, and so I was talking to her mom, and so then she was waving, I guess, to get the phone back. So she said, well, I'll start vocal rest later. Okay. So, anyways, writing is going fine. It's an interesting process. It's just an interesting process. I'm trying to hold to my schedule. So for 2 weeks, I've been able to hold to my schedule and get 5,000 words a week done. I seem to be in pretty good shape this week. I think for the week, I'm at 2,900 words, I think. Which is about 100, 150 words ahead of where I'm supposed to be, so that's good. I made myself a little schedule, put down the number of hours I was supposed to work every day on writing, and it varies. On Sunday, I can get about 4 hours in. On Monday, about 3 hours. Tuesday, 2 hours. Wednesday, 2 hours. Thursday, 1 hour. Friday, 4 hours. And then Saturday, I think 6 hours I put down. 5 or 6 hours. 6 hours maybe on Saturday. So, and at about 250 words an hour, which I usually do a little better than that, I can get my 5,000 words in. So, you know, it's, life is kind of interesting. It's very interesting that a measured life, while it seems a bit dehumanizing to say, here's your goal, gotta hit it, here's your goal, gotta hit it, here's your goal, gotta hit it. You know, it feels like you're just treating yourself like a machine. By the same token, it really helps you to know where you are if you're trying to get something accomplished. And so I, you know, I have myself a spreadsheet and I'm keeping track of it as to how long, what chapter I was on, you know, why I wasn't able to get something done this last week. I had an interruption. My son-in-law had to make a quick trip to Chicago. So he left like at 2:30 in the morning, on Tuesday morning, drove up there with a buddy, got some stuff, loaded up on a trailer, turned around and drove back, was planning on being back about 6:45. My daughter had a rehearsal for her improv group, and so she needed someone to watch granddaughter, so I said, sure, I'd do that. So I went down to watch my granddaughter for a little bit and then get her in bed and then write for a little bit. And, you know, I didn't get much done. I reviewed some things and got some corrections done, but as far as new words, I don't think I only put down like 100 words or something. It wasn't good, which Tuesday is the 2-hour day, so that means 500 words. But you can see that immediately. You know, that, whoop, we're out of sync here. But I had been able on Monday night, as opposed to putting down 750 words, I had been able to put down 1,000 words on Monday night. So that put me in striking range. And then last night, I did almost 1,000 words. And so I got myself caught up. So it's interesting to watch that and watch it transpire and to see the benefit that there is in living a measured life. Living a life where statistically you know what you're supposed to be doing every day. And then you just set it up and you knock it down. That's not the way we usually work artistically. We like to think of being inspired. But it is the way that Anthony Trollope used to work, my hero. He did much better than I do because he would do 2,500 words a day. In 2.5 hours, he would put down 2,500 words in the 1800s. It just seems incredible to me that it could do that much output. So I'm nowhere near that. Because he would put down 250 words every 15 minutes. And I'm hoping to get down 250 words in an hour. Wow. It's really, really, really amazing. But anyways, it's going fine. It's going fine. It's interesting. Because I'm in chapter 4 now, and chapters 1, 2, and 3 are pretty much run, jump, explosion, you know, bam, bam, bam type, and now that I'm in chapter 3, I'm in a different gear a little bit. I'm like, wow, it was funner writing all that explosions. But you know, you got to introduce a few more characters and get a few more things done besides just blowing things up. And then I realized that, today that one of the problems is that I hadn't set enough foundation of the character, of the new characters that were coming in chapter 4 and chapter 5. And so they weren't relatable enough. And so that's, you know, I've got to go back and fix, well, put some more stuff in chapter 4 about the two new characters who are coming in, to try to thicken that out a little bit. And I've got the space. I've got two or three more pages in chapter 4 that really, before I get to the end point of where I want it to be at the end of that chapter and then cut away to some other stuff. So part of tonight, I'm only on for 1 hour tonight of writing, because typically by the time I get home, by the time I exercise, by the time I get the podcast uploaded, you know, yada, 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 get supper, that kind of thing. Thursday nights are usually, they're a little tight. But with my beloved still being sick, who knows, I may have some extra time tonight. Or we may just play Scrabble. Because she would like that, and she's probably feeling pretty puny about this whole vocal rest thing. So, we'll see. Everything's good. Everything will work out just fine. It'll be good. I read an article, it's been a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, oh, that looks interesting for podcast, and so I went ahead and marked it, and then really read it last night, and there wasn't quite as much beef in the article as I was hoping there would be, but, some interesting things, and some potential for more interesting things as we go through more of this research. Really, the headline of the article kind of caught my eye, and the headline was, "Does reading actually change the brain?" And specifically, this was by Carol Clark Emery. She was quoting some studies. Specifically, they were talking about reading fiction. And I thought, let's see what we have to say here, because there is a rich, rich tradition of fiction being used for moral training. Specifically, short parables, those types of things, that teach a lesson about life that are taught and then handed down. What was his name? William Bennett, I think, had put together a book of stories, and I can't remember what it was. We actually have it at home, and it was very interesting. You know, stories with a moral to them. That if you remembered these stories as you moved through life, that, you know, they would serve you well. I mean, this is, after all, exactly what the Proverbs are. The Proverbs are nothing more than sayings, little, well, they're not actually stories, but little sayings, little things that you can remember that can help you as you go through life. Jesus obviously told parables, and it was in the process of telling those parables that he tried to relate to people what the kingdom of heaven was like. And I'm going to be incorporating parables about the kingdom of heaven into this series of books, because there are some very interesting things that the parables tell us about life and about our expectations of life that we don't always grasp because we're too busy skipping over those parts and reinterpreting the parables as we like. Now, some may say, well, then what's the point of the parables? Well, the point of the parables is typically, they operate on a lot of different levels. And there's sort of a generic level that they operate on that are good. And then when you dig in a little bit and you think about it, you go, hey, you know, there's more here. So that's going to be very interesting for me. And because I'm a storyteller, obviously an article like this catches my eye. Does reading actually change the brain? Once I got into this article, there really wasn't that much in the article, but there were some interesting quotes and things. And according to their studies, in fact, after you read a novel, that there are actual changes that linger in the brain at least for a few days. And it causes changes in the resting state connectivity of the brain. And I think they explained that a little further on. They did have an interesting quote from a neurologist. This neurologist, Gregory Burns, lead author of the study, says that stories shape our lives, and in some cases help define a person. We want to understand how stories get into your brain and what they do to it. So, what they did was they were at Emory, the university, and so they took 21 undergraduates and they participated in this study, and it was conducted over 19 days. And the first thing they did was they just brought them in, I think for 5 days, and they just scanned them. They came in the morning and they got a baseline fMRI scan of their brains in a resting state. Then they were given 9 sections of the novel, about 30 pages each, over a 9-day period. They were asked to read the assigned section in the evening and then come in the following morning. After they took a quiz to ensure they had finished the reading assignment, they underwent another fMRI scan of their brains in a non-reading resting state. After completing all 9 sections of the novel, their participants returned for 5 more mornings to undergo additional scans to check their resting state. So they said that the results showed heightened connectivity in the left temporal cortex, which is an area associated with receptivity for language. That was on the mornings following the reading assignment. So they were saying that even though the participants were actually reading the novel, were not reading a novel while they were in the scanner, they retained this heightened connectivity. Said we call that a shadow activity, almost like a muscle memory. So this connectivity in the language portion of their brain was higher after they had read the evening before. They said they also saw more connectivity in the central sulcus region of the brain, which is the primary sensory motor region of the brain. This is pretty interesting. And has been known to be associated with representations of sensation for the body, a phenomenon known as grounded cognition. In other words, just thinking about running can activate the neurons associated with the physical act of running. Back to the neurologist, he said the neural changes that we found associated with physical sensation and movement suggest that reading a novel can transport you into the body of the protagonist. We already knew that good stories can put you in someone else's shoes in a figurative sense. Now we're seeing that something may also be happening biologically. And they're still not sure how long those kind of changes last. He said, but the fact that they're detecting them over a few days for a randomly assigned novel suggests that your favorite novels could have a bigger and more long-lasting effect on the biology of your brain. So, what's the takeaway from all this? There's something going on with stories. But stories have something that they do to our brains, that inhabiting these other imaginary worlds can actually affect the functioning of our brains even after we finish with the story. I'm getting my mail. One moment. So, that's pretty interesting. And I think one of the things this illustrates is the power of the story. I know in my own life, the power of the story, maybe because I'm a writer, is a very interesting thing that I have actually grown and changed my approach to life because of a story I was writing and dwelling in and focusing on for several months. And in going through what those characters are going through over and 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 over, and in experiencing what those characters are experiencing, backing in my garage, that by doing that and dwelling on that, I found that their experiences would readily come to mind when I was moving, you know, through my life. And I would come up against situations that might have some tangential connection to those situations. It was interesting this past week because I had an experience where I was kind of going down one path, and then all of a sudden I remembered, and it was like, oh, hey. It was like, ding, yeah, that's right. Because I've been thinking a lot about this anxiety that we carry through life of, you know, our uncertainty and our desire for convenience and our wish for control and those things that are spawned out of our fear and our greed and our pride. And obviously, I've got a big project coming up. I got a project I got to get finished up on, and I'm hoping that it's going to come out well, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. There's all that kind of stuff, and all that's kind of hanging over me right now. And so I was kind of feeling that, you know, little bit of anxiety about that and that kind of stuff. And as I was just kind of working away this week, trying to get some things finished up, I remembered back to a moment that I had written in the third book, part number four. No, yes, third book of Grumpy Old Prophets, Knowing. And there's a scene in there where Jesus is dying on the cross, and what he's doing is he's actually living everybody's lives with them, and thereby inheriting everything that they've done so that he can pay for it. But he's not only just paying for everything they've done, he's actually living their lives with them so they never have to be alone. And that what I propose is that Christ on the cross experienced our lives with us so that whether we are aware of it or not, he is and continues to be at the deepest part of our being with us, whispering to us, trying to help us to understand that everything's okay, there's nothing to fear, all is well. And just remembering that I had written that and placing myself in that moment in the book again for just a moment, it was like something just went click, and it was like, hey, that's right. Everything's okay because he's been with me. And so I don't know how it is for people who read my stories, but I know for me, having spent months with a given story and lived in that world, I know that it has a profound effect on my brain. And in fact, it is one of the main reasons now that I write. I write to understand my world. And I can very much testify to the fact that in writing, in experiencing those things, there is a change that happens. And I think a change for the better in my brain because of that, because of my interaction with fiction. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.